Osiris.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
You're tuned in to The Show on the Road, a new podcast where I interview songwriters, band leaders, and musicians from around the world. My name is Zach Lupitin. This week on the show, my conversation with a renowned British song collector, sonic interpreter, roots music promoter, and deeply intuitive folk singer who came to music almost by accident after a life as a wilderness survivalist and nature advocate, and has become one of the leading voices in Great Britain of saving the treasured indigenous music cultures that rapidly disappear each year, Sam Lee. This is the second week of my British Artist episode series, and I was lucky to catch Sam in his bustling co-working space above a coffee shop in London as I was passing through on our tour of the UK a few weeks back. And who better to give me a crash course in London's evolution than a bloke born and raised in this concrete anaconda of a city? Each time I've been here with my band, I question why on earth we attempt to drive a big old van of instruments and confused Americans around these cobbled streets in Camden and Kensington, driving on the other side of the road in perpetually pouring rain with a manual transmission, which we're not used to. Long story short, after playing shows down in Wales and going all the way up to North Yorkshire on the edge of those green mountains leading to Scotland, I'm grateful we got home with only just a scratch on that rental. And we met so many interesting, brilliant people. Even the sound guys we had in Bristol and Manchester in these dive bars, they seem to have multiple degrees in political science. And talking to Sam, you can see that people do many things here. They're academics and they're musicians and they're technicians, and they work hard and they tell you how it is. And it's really, really fun to talk to them. But let's get back to the favorite person I met on my English travels, the wild-eyed, kind-hearted song collector Sam Lee. Ever since his gorgeously delicate and meticulously researched debut Ground of Its Own shot him from hopeful academic to nationally recognized folk star by being nominated for the prestigious Mercury Prize, Sam has been relentlessly working to save and rejuvenate the ancient melodies and songcraft of the indigenous Irish and Scottish traveler tradition, the Romani Gypsy rhythms and stories, and connect those traditional melodies to a youthful pop culture that is yearning to know where it came from and where it is going next. His Nest Collective gathers artists, authors, dancers, and theatrical renegades and puts on shows and events across London, making Sam a rare double threat, both an artist and a promoter of other artists. It's his selflessness in the end that rings out in his music. And the funny thing is, Sam may not even consider himself to be a musician at all, really, except as you will hear throughout the episode, he has one of the most deliciously delicate, liltingly lovely voices I've heard in ages. And a memory for strains of ancient melody that, if it weren't for his ever-sparking mind, may have faded into the black hole of history, never to be sung again. As we sat in this little sound booth, hushed from the caterwauling cacophony of London outside, I was struck especially by a moment when Sam admitted that he had lost touch with his first love, the green natural world. And not only did it make him mentally broken, it physically began to break him down too. Like being separated from the trees, the lakes, and the mist-choked hills where his ancestors came from was making him slowly disappear. The good news? He went out into nature, and he found himself again. And from then on, he's been dedicating himself to capturing that wild spirit of the green jewel of England in his music, and in his writing, and his teaching, and his collecting. And he isn't messing around, guys. Sam collaborates with birds. Birds in the forests of Essex, like he truly writes songs with their voices as part of the songbook. And despite his obsession with the ancient melodies of long-forgotten worlds, Sam also loves Janet Jackson and Madonna just as much. And maybe it is Sam Lee's quixotic goal of bringing those two worlds together, making the lost found and the popular music of our day more in touch with its primeval origins. We may ask ourselves, will future alien scholars be marveling at the rhythms of Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation in the year 4000? If there's anything left here after our ravenous sixth extinction, we don't know. But I'm super glad I could meet up with Sam in London before it all goes dark, and I hope you get a chance to listen to his newest record, Old Wow, which comes out January 31st, 2020, the same day my gang Dustbowl Revival's record, Is It You, Is It Me, drops. It's gonna be a special day. So let's go on a little journey right now. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Sam Lee.
There were seven little gypsies all in a row. None of them lame nor lazy, oh. And they sang so sweet and so complete, and they sang the heart of a lady, oh.
All right, state your name and where we are and what you do.
I'm Sam Lee, a folk singer and song collector and nature conservationist. And we are in Hackney in northeast London, the cultural epicenter of the city of this country.
I got a little tour of the market because I accidentally went to your house. But I'm glad I did because I got to go to that epic market. Tell me about that market by your house.
Ridley Road Market is probably one of the most famous markets in the country. It's a little bit like walking through Burkina Faso, come sort of Mumbai.
Yeah.
There's every culture of the world. You can literally buy anything there and very cheaply. And it's full of old East London characters, you know, people who've been doing the markets for 200 years in their family. Yeah. Egg sellers, vegetable sellers, sellers of manioc from South America. It's just an amazing cultural hub there.
And what EastEnders is based on.
And the famous British soap opera kind of was modelled off that market of the goings-on. And you start chatting, get to know some of the people, the traders there, and there's like old stories. Yeah, hundreds of years of old stories.
I was able to get a new iPhone cable and jerk chicken and rice within 30 feet of each other, you know, which is good. I almost bought a coat, too.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, nobody leaves Ridley Road without some treasure.
What is the most crazy thing you've gotten there?
Well, I'll tell you the most crazy thing I've gotten there. This is the amazing thing about that market. One of the communities that goes and buys fruit and veg there are the Irish Travellers. And they are our, like, indigenous, ancient, nomadic people treated and have a very much similar situation as the First Nations, Native Americans. Mm. They sing, they're the last carriers of traditional song, and they have their own language. They live in caravans. They were lived on the road, nomadic people. And often I will meet old travellers, you know, in their 70s and 80s, going shopping, and I will stop them and start chatting to them because I've done a lot of years of recording that community, song collecting. Often I will start chatting to an old traveller and find out that they are still singing thousand-year-old ballads. Mm. And so I've collected songs on Ridley Road Market, which is a bonkers idea as a kind of, you know, think of Alan Lomax and all the great song collectors going to these far-off places. I just go to my local market, and there you find song carriers of traditional songs that don't exist anywhere else in the world. So that's probably my greatest discovery.
Is there a song that you think that came out of one of those characters there that you...
Oh, yeah. I mean, so many. I mean, one of the songs that a lot of the old travellers sing, which is a very ancient, probably like 1700s, Broken Token ballad, which was, "There being a lady in her father's garden, a gentleman he came riding by, and he stood a while and he gazed all on her. He said, 'Fair lady, would you fancy I?'" That's one song I definitely, on the court, pulling a between, you know, the jerk chicken stall and the incense sticks, I've got an old traveller to sing.
And what is the difference between those songs from the Irish tradition and the songs of the Scottish traveller and ballad singers? That you met up with Stanley Robertson, right?
Yeah, right. Well, actually, a lot of the same songs. So that song I just sang will have its equivalent in the Scottish Traveller. Right. The songs go backwards and forwards. That song, there'll be American versions of it as well. Many of them, it's the songs that came over with the settlers and the colonies. So they are all variants of one another. There are a few songs you'll get that are unique to one of the communities, but mostly it's a shared English language repertoire.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, I just came up on this tour from the north of Spain, A Coruña and Galicia, and I was there in August, too. You never think you're going to be in the north of Spain twice in a few months, but I was struck by the bagpipe music and the sort of Celtic traditions of northern Spain and sort of how these cultures that we assume are totally separated are very intertwined even today.
I mean, it's the bagpipes are obviously really shared. Some say that the bagpipes may have come over from Spain. The Spanish had a great influence on the west coast of Ireland.
Yeah,
a lot of the decorative styles and, you know, the raven black hair they say of the Irish comes from the Spaniards. And many traditions have kind of been imported over the last, you know, Great Britain and Ireland is a country of, you know, so many different cultures that have come in their waves of different migrations. So we're not so separate. The languages, the Celtic languages that we hear in across the British Isles are all connected.
So, how did you start collecting songs? Was it as a hobby that sort of took over?
Was it a hobby? Feels like such a sort of like flippant way of putting it.
An obsession?
It is an obsession. I don't do it so much nowadays because most of the people have now passed on who have songs to sing, or I have recorded them and just go back to visit. But it became a point of a realization that these are really rare and nobody's paying any attention, and that, you know, these songs are going to disappear. And, you know, within 5-10 years, I've got to go and find as many of these singers as possible.
Mm.
And literally nobody else was doing that work. So I went out and I took other people and I took film crews and I took recording equipment and made documentaries and taught people the art of song collecting and have built up this enormous archive of, you know, hundreds upon hundreds of songs that nobody's ever heard before, versions of songs, new lyrics, new melodies, some songs that have never been
documented. Where do people find those songs?
On my website, songcollectors.org.
Okay.
And you can see each singer has their own profile, a little bit like Facebook in a way, like a MySpace.
Mm-hmm.
Of that singer, their story, their family story, the songs.
Mm-hmm.
You can listen to the songs. You can go and see the films I've made about them. It's a really wonderful resource of, you know, many extraordinary elders.
Yeah, you know, we live in our own little ecosystems, right? Mm. And in LA or in California, people are not thinking about, you know, the music of Ireland and England and Scotland, but it's filtered into our music constantly, you know, bluegrass and folk music, and that a lot of the people who started singing, you know, in the turn of the 20th century, these old British songs and turning them into sort of gospel blues into this new form of whatever, rock and roll, there's this symbiotic relationship between the British Isles and America, you know, on many levels, but especially musically.
Oh,
you know?
Totally, and that the way it goes backwards and forwards.
Yeah,
it's really amazing, and I hear it firsthand because, you know, that a lot of the crooning styles, and, you know, they say the word rock and roll comes from the Romani rocker, the rocker roll. So as they're rolling on the wagon, the gypsies were the travellers ones taken out to build the wagon trail because they are the wagon makers. They live in wagons and caravans, so they went out to build it, and they're. The terminology for them sitting on the front of the cart, you know, of the wagon and rolling along was called the rocker and roll.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's a theory. But a lot of the decorative styles, that kind of glissando of the country singing comes from the Irish travellers who went out in the droves for a new life, you know, at that time, went out with the migrants, you know, during the famine. And inform that style of singing that grew into a sort of, you know, country style, which has then come back to the UK and Ireland in country music. And now all the Irish travellers or the youngsters, all they sing is country music. And they sing all with American accent. They all got the down, all those.
Yeah.
But it's actually a musical form that they influenced, you know, 100, 200 years before.
Yeah.
So it's amazing, this kind of, you know, feedback loop we have.
Well, the gypsy music that you're talking about, the Romani people, you could almost say that Django Reinhardt was like the first rock and roll shredding guitar player, you know?
Totally.
And there's probably a million guys before him that we don't know about, you know?
Yeah.
And my question to you is, you know, are there still gypsy traditions that are evolving today that you know about? And what are those called and, you know, where are they?
Yeah. Well, the gypsies have always been great musical sponges and assimilators, and, you know, wherever they've gone in as they've made their journey since the, you know, 1200 years ago, they left the Hindu Kush in India and travelled westwards and through Eastern Europe,
even
North
the word
Africa.
Gypsy is kind of has a bad connotation.
Well, it does. I mean, you know,
overarching generalization, you know, Indian.
Well, yeah, totally. It's, you know, it's a misnomer, like the word Indian, in that it was a term taken put on by the English and the Scots, because they believed these were people who were from they were called the Little Egyptians, and that corrupted down into gypsy. But of course, it's now a term that's been reclaimed by the gypsy community. That's what they are. The gypsies are the travellers. Yeah. Are different. They're not gypsies. They're different, genetically totally different. They're endemic to the UK and Ireland. But the gypsies, everywhere they've gone, they've taken up local styles, be that Eastern Europe, be that North African styles, be that, you know, Spanish and, you know, bringing the duende and the flamenco and all those kind of, what you can hear is those echoes of the East so wonderfully, and that virtuosity, because they've been such great music carriers. It's been so much their role. There are new traditions emerging. You know, there's still today the gypsy community, the English gypsy and the Roma, who are the Eastern European gypsies who've arrived in the UK in the last, you know, 20, 30, 40 years. They've taken rap and hip hop on. They've got their own, you know, country style gypsy subjects with country style. There's so much constantly being used, but always with that mark of their own identity. So it's still an evolving tradition, and ever will be.
You have this song that I found on online called Hallucination.
Oh, right, yeah.
Which is a 17-minute sort of live piece that you made for the New Music Biennial. And they have this refrain of the dark-eyed gypsy, and you have people, you know, older folks telling these stories with the music. You know, there's an old lady, and I think there's someone playing the saw, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's this old, you know, fisherman, you know, talking about, you know, repairing people's kneecaps that are busted open on the high seas, you know? What is that song, and, like, how did that come together?
Yeah, oh, I'm pleased you ask about that, because it's a piece of work that it was the first time I was ever asked to compose. I'm not a composer, I'm an interpreter, I'm an adapter, but I never think of myself as a composer. And the New Music Biennial is a very prestigious experience where they ask musicians to go to the City of Culture in the UK, and every 2 years we have a new City of Culture. And it's a very big deal, because the whole kind of country's attention creatively goes onto this city, and I was asked to go and be there, and I wanted to create a piece that took in voices of the locals there. So I went and did some song collecting, and I met many old gypsies and travellers there.
Which city was it?
It's Hull in the northeast, so near Scarborough, near Leeds in Yorkshire, and it's a very unique, independent, unusual seafaring town. You know, it was one of the main ports for the fishing industry when Britain was a great fishing had big fishing industry there, and so I went and found one of the last of the sea captains who, you know, grew up as a cabin boy and rose all the way up to be a captain of a trawler, you know, a big trawler, and would spend months out at sea. And a man who knows the Arctic seabed, the seabed around the Arctic like the back of his hand, literally can tell you every, you know, nook and rock and sunken bit of vessel, an old bit of kit, you know, an extraordinary map of the underwater world that we none of us know about. And this old gypsy lady in her 80s called Renee Smith. And I took their voices and stories and I wove some of the local songs and composed because I'm musical concrete style with strings and piano above to create this journey from one world to the other. And that's what the hallucinate, the city was Hull. So instead of hallucinations, it became hallucinations, hence the terrible pun.
How did that melody go again? It was beautiful.
The seven yellow gypsies.
Yeah.
There were seven yellow gypsies all in a row. And none of them lay more lazy, oh. And the fairest one among them all, she is gone with a dark-eyed gypsy, oh.
Until they come to an open field, oh. Would you give up your house and your land to run away with the dark-eyed gypsy, oh?
The next day, they come walking past the old wagons, and he said, I want that little one, and the one what he wanted is mate God. I ended up living with him. He come, he said to my dad, we had the wagons in, he shouted, my dad was in bed, he said, Jeffrey, my dad said, what? He said, can I live with Renee? My dad said, wait one morning, and I'll get up and I'll see. The next morning, when they got up, they come to my dad. My dad said, as long as you don't knock her about and look after her, you can live together. And we're together for 50 years.
That one.
Yeah, and that could be, you know, one of those songs that was taken over by bluegrass and folk music in the States and made into almost like this drinking song. Gypsy, you know, and you could feel this undercurrent of history running through it, you know, and that's, yeah, I love the way you sang that with the voices and there's a Jew's harp, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. How many instruments do you play?
None. The Jew's harp, the shruti box. I wouldn't dare play a piano.
The shruti box?
Yeah, the Indian shruti.
What is that?
It's like a little drone instrument.
Mm.
Yeah, a little harmonium.
Mm. So you had this album, Ground of Its Own, get a good amount of attention, you know, the Mercury Prize. What is the Mercury Prize in the UK? Is that like the Grammys, kind of?
The thing is, it's a single prize. It's just only one.
Yeah.
I'd say it's more like the Polaris Prize in Canada, which is more recognizing of one album. They nominate 12 albums a year, and one wins. And I didn't win. Thank God, because it's the cut. If you win the Mercury Prize, it's like the greatest thing and the worst thing that can ever happen to you. But a nomination is a very wonderful and prestigious honor.
Did that change anything for you?
I mean, it changed everything because I was a nobody. Nobody had heard of me. I played about 20 gigs in my life before I got the nomination. I was sort of stupidly novice.
Mm.
You know, with ready to take on the world, but it was a bit of a, you know, sudden step from 0 to 60 for me. And it was great. You know, it cut out years of hard graft, which allowed me to do a lot of the other work, you know, the song collecting work, the nature conservation work, and go, okay, look, here I have an artist with a very with a message behind what I'm doing. So it got me in there early, and I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, because it feels like, you know, listening to that record all the way through, like you can be dropped into this green rolling world. And it was a nice album to listen to as I was going to bed my first night in London, you know, and it's like you were singing me these old lullabies to sleep, you know, and I felt like it was almost like the score of an old movie that I had never seen type thing. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice to hear. It's I think the word trance is one that I appreciate a lot because I think what I wanted to, I'd never made music before. I learned how to make music through making that album, and I think I knew what I wanted to make, but I didn't know how to do it. And that was a journey. And what I wanted to make was and I still enjoy making is music that takes people, transports, and dispenses with a lot of the form and stylistic of folk music to create something that uses textural sound from a lot of transcendental music, devotional music. And I'd listen, you know, I listen all my life and been obsessed in that way. So it's a really taking the essences of a lot more foreign music and embedding, using them as the kind of to invigorate songs from the UK that never had those sorts of arrangements.
Yeah, and you know, you came from this world of wilderness sort of survival and conservation. Yeah. You know, how are those two worlds linked in music and your work in nature?
Well, the album I've just finished and is coming out in a little while, beginning of 2020, is an album that for me the first time really, really takes that message that folk songs are, and the songs that are on this album, Old Wow, are very much songs that for me have within the heart of them a very deep connection to the natural world, and have within them something very essential to how we once had a closer role with, and nature had a greater part to play in our lives, when we were much more integrated in the natural world and more observant, more, you know, aware, and more connected. So I've taken a selection of songs that, and I have adapted and rewritten a lot of songs to speak to what a contemporary yet ancient relationship might be towards the land, our environment, the species around us, and our role within it at a time where we are so much more aware of the fact that we are in major trouble with nature and we are in major trouble by being part of nature. We're in the sixth mass extinction. We are losing species at a rate of 200 extinctions a day, and that we are in line to feel the same effects of what we've done to this world. So folk songs are a way of connecting our hearts, I feel, into the necessary changes that we need to make as a society.
Well, you as a wilderness survival expert, right, we're maybe in some dire situations. Has there ever been a moment where you've had an encounter with a wild creature or a dangerous situation? Is there a memory that you recall most right now?
Oh, well, I mean, I think the big one, the most profound one, was when I was 19. I went out with the great British TV presenter and survival teacher Ray Mears, who has a show on the BBC and has been, you know, the kind of godfather of this subject and my hero. And I somehow, age 19, I managed to go out to British Columbia with him and his sadly late wife. And Ray and me were just doing some studying out in British Columbia on the coast there. And we came ashore and had a face-to-face encounter with a full-grown female grizzly bear. Just as she's weaned her two cubs about half a day ago. And that was by far the most profound confrontation. It was a benign experience, but seeing this, I mean, you know, they are the size of buses. When they stand up, as she did, they're 11 feet high. That's almost twice my height.
Right.
And we knew full well how dangerous they are, but we had an incredible, terrifying, but very humbling experience of meeting that grizzly.
And you've lived in London your whole life?
Yeah, all of it. Actually, I lived in San Francisco for 6 months, but other than that, I've been pretty much London.
How has it changed?
It's changed irreparably. I'm not going to speak about the gentrification, the loss of, venues are closing, shops are now just kind of trendy coffee, you know, it's going through the same thing that everywhere in the world has experienced. But I think most importantly, London is full of creativity and uniqueness and irreverence and activism and like complete madness. It's still got a very wild spirit. It's a very green city. And I think London's really working so hard to try and maintain a sense of community and and vigor in that way.
Well, the single that is out from your first song from your new record, Old Wow, which comes out January 31st, which is the same day our new album comes out.
Oh, no way. And the same day as Brexit.
Oh, now that they extended it?
Yeah.
I thought it was going to, we thought Brexit was going to be on
your tour, your first gig in London, everyone wants to kill themselves.
In Sheffield, we thought it was going to be like a Brexit party or a death march. I don't even know what it was going to be.
Consider yourself.
Yeah.
Yes, day of execution, you were relieved.
But your song, Garden of England, Seeds of Love, right, is really sort of speaking to this old decay with the newness bursting from it like, you know, flowers. But that it's there's a sadness to that, you know, because the unspoiled natural parts of England are almost impossible to find, you know. Tell me about that song a little bit.
Yeah, it both speaks about that idea of the disappearance of wildness, but I think I'm speaking in ecological terms about the songs themselves, actually, at the heart of it. And I've using references, readapting the old song Seeds of Love, using lots of these iconic phrases and images from other folk songs, talking about how in many ways what's happening to folk music in the loss of that connection to the ancient, and the trying to be make it packageable and work for an industry, how we're losing that depth and that, you know, almost kind of, you know, spiritual essence to them, as the music is just trying to be turned into another genre that can be sold and bought and commodified.
The garden of England once bloomed its sound of salt, now destined for some bouquet. No roses in this display.
Well, we're always struggling between sort of the idea of being artists who don't think of money and synchronization for television and commercials, and yet we try to survive in a large city that's expensive as fuck. You know, you have a song that was put in a pretty big movie, right? It's King Arthur movie. You know, that is your sort of very winsome British folk voice with this very commercial, poppy, cinematic, you know, thing that is racking up the listens on Spotify right now. You know, how does that feel, that sort of divide between your artistic personality and being involved in this high commerce?
I think that's about the stewardship that we bring to the songs.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying I don't want any success. I don't, you know, of course not. I want as many bloody Spotify and YouTube plays as possible. And I want to, you know, I want to have success in my career. But I'm actually thinking about the artistic integrity more. You know, I like to think the song that went in the King Arthur, the Devil and the Huntsman, was a song that, despite the commerciality of it and its success, actually is a song that I feel really proud of as taking elements of folklore and folk song and growing it into something really powerful that's brought an enormous number of listeners to attention of the... And I get it a lot, saying this is, you know, this is, I feel the ancientness, and I feel too much folk music is trying to sound like pop, and actually what I want to do is try and kind of almost like pop music sound like folk, have that sense of depth and keep the integrity. So the songs that I sing have always, like, you know, the telling the story of where they come from, and linking people, having them draw something deep into that. I, you know, the song, the Seeds of Love, Garden of England, is all about the old wow, this kind of sense of the quality at the heart of it that is so about that ancient resonance, that vibration that I feel is there within the old folk songs. When I hear an ancient old gypsy traveller singing as they've learnt it from their grandpa, who's learnt it from their grandfather, and so on and so forth, that sense of, like, the energy of the ancients is the same quality that I feel when I'm sitting under an oak tree and, you know, and the Garden of England is coming to life and really communicating. That actually, if we stop learning how to tap into that quality and source from it as musicians, as folk musicians, as musicians who are working with an ancient quality, that the music thins out and gets weaker, and we need to do the hard work to make sure we are maintaining that, like, that, you know, that soup is being kept thick and, you know, rich broth, and not just becoming a watery kind of, you know, salty, you know, thin thing.
What is your guilty pleasure music?
What is my guilty pleasure?
Like, I love Ace of Base, okay? I grew up listening to it. I realized that the single that
As in, my I saw band, the sign and it opened up my eyes. I mean, but you were 16 when you heard that. You couldn't help like it.
11.
11, you know. All right.
But, well...
How old are you?
Let's not talk about age.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is that I didn't even realize how much that had filtered into my songwriting tastes when we just released this single called Enemy.
Yeah.
My band Dust Bowl Revival. And it has this whistle part. Doo-doo-doo-doo. And I'm like, that's all that she wants, basically.
All that she wants.
You know? Do-do-do-do-do-do. And I'm like, man, I didn't even realize that until we released the song into the world. And I'm like, wow. Hey,
you can't help what you were force-fed aged 11, 12, you know? And, you know, if it's Ace of Base, then that's it, you know?
What is your guilty pleasure? Come on.
Oh my gosh. I don't feel like this is a guilty pleasure. Like, I am and always have been a huge Michael Jackson fan.
Yeah.
And there's complexity of
listening. You're not allowed to be a fan of him anymore. I'm joking.
Well, you know, it's
tough because, you know, as my wife would say, I can still be a fan of the Jackson 5 because he didn't know he was a predator then.
Yeah. And look, the man is dead. It's highly complex, so I'm not going to go into that one. But what I will say is I really love Janet Jackson. Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation and Janet. I mean, those are albums when I was like 14, 15, 16, hearing them. I still listen to them and just get really excited. And kind of, this is safe. This is dangerous. This is dirty, but safe. Madonna, Erotica. That's my guilty pleasure.
All right.
You can put that one in.
Is the expression old wow... Is that something you created, or is that an old sort of traditional thing?
It's a name that came to me in a very profound moment, and I'll tell the story as briefly as I can. But I was having become a musician for a few years, and suddenly found myself on the road and touring and in buses and trains and planes. I stopped being in nature as I had done, you know, all year round so much, and I started getting very ill. Mm. I mean, like mental health ill.
Mm.
And I realized I was suffering from kind of nature deficit issues. So I took myself off on a school of wilderness study with an American school called the Way of Coyote, the art of mentoring with John Young, who's a native to your part of the world. He's a Californian.
Mm.
We were out in Scotland with the school, and I went on this amazing journey to reconnect in, to try, like an older lover, to try and find the romance again, find you know, get the mojo working,
rekindle the spark.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I was really struggling, and I was beginning to kind of like have crisis, like, oh my God, it's gone, it's dead, I have nothing left. And I set myself this challenge to go off on a journey, and in that, take this question of how can I love you more? How can I love nature more? And as I went on this kind of 2-day journey, like vision quest, I went into a kind of major crisis with it. And in declaring out, where are you? How can I love you more? Who are you? What are you? Suddenly this buzzard, which is like that kind of like, you know, our great eagle, one of our great eagles, just dropped down from the sky on top of me, screeching this, it's kind of song down on my head, which is something these birds never do, you know, they don't go anywhere near you.
Right.
And this buzzard just came so close, dropped down, and then started circling around me, crying out, singing down on me. And it was like, it was the acknowledgement I needed of like nature saying, look, you're okay, you're part of us, we love you. You know, it's all going to be good. And in that moment, I had this kind of, wow. Mm. And I felt that sense of ancientness.
Mm.
And suddenly these words, this song, which is not a song I've ever recorded, but it's kind of this poem came up of, it was, how can I love you more, old wow? Mm. And I realized old wow is the name that I have for that quality, that essence I was mentioning, that kind of like the God molecule almost that's in everything, vibrating away. And it's my name for it, you know, and everyone should find their own name for it. But this is what I call for, that sense of, and I hear them in folk, when I hear a folk song being sung, and I know it's channeling.
Mm-hmm.
That's when old Wow is appearing. And so it became something that this album was named and focusing on, this thing, this substance.
All right, I'm going to ask you one more question and I'll let you go. If you could bring a group of people to a remote place that you've been, maybe the most beautiful place you've ever seen, where would it be? And you would also be throwing your own music festival.
Yeah.
Because you're also a music promoter, right? Yeah. You have this Nest Collective, right? You bring together, you know, artists who people need to see, and you put them in venues and have them tell their stories. Five artists that you would bring to this remote place as part of your own festival, and they can be dead or alive.
Ah, lovely. So, the place, most importantly, would be, it's a place that I do bring musicians to.
Mm.
And it's a place in the forest in Sussex where the nightingales sing. This very rare bird that I do concerts with every year in spring. And so the place is already somewhere where we have music. And it's a very, for me, it's like my second home.
Mm.
And it's a little old cabin, open one side, a lean-to in this clearing.
Mm.
And there's a fire and we have a little seats and it's one of the most exquisite and ecologically, you know, prolific places in England. So the unusual singers that I'd like to have, the unusual people I'd like to have are, I'd like to have Joni Mitchell alive. I'd like her to come along.
I mean, she's still very alive.
Yeah.
But it's hard for her to sing now.
Yeah. But I just want her to be experience this.
Yeah.
Wonder thing of the nightingale. He is one of the musicians. He's one of, so one is the nightingale because he will be singing. There'll be Joni Mitchell. I'd also like to have somebody who's no longer alive of the classical world. I'm thinking somebody of the classical music. I'd like to have Beatrice Harrison, and she was Elgar's cellist.
Mm.
And she was famous for improvising with the nightingales and really gave to me the knowledge of playing with these birds. They improvise with you. So as you sing and play, the bird sings with you, and it's an amazing relationship. So Beatrice Harrison, she died in the 50s. I'd also like to have Donny Hathaway.
Mm. That'd be one of mine.
Yeah. Because he's just the voice.
Just a jealous guy.
Oh my God, that live album is the best album in the whole world.
It's like maybe one of my top five covers of all time.
Amen. I'd also love to have Sarah Vaughan.
Mm.
She's my singer. She's my favorite singer.
Mm.
And Caetano Veloso, also alive.
Man, I would totally go to this festival. This is like my iPod.
Oh, really? Oh, good. We've got to swap songs. And, oh, man, why not? I'm just because I'm feeling really guilty pleasured. Whitney Houston.
Great.
I mean, she's the singer.
Have her and Janet do a duet.
And Janet, yeah. Okay. And Aretha, as way of my quota.
Now you're just getting, getting greedy.
I am, yeah.
Man, that would be like... Can we just make that happen?
Yeah,
somehow?
Sure.
Like holographs, or
have you got Joni's number? I'm sure you've got.
Yeah, everyone in LA knows Joni Mitchell.
Exactly. Which canyon is she now? Is it like Topanga?
Topanga, Laurel, Coldwater. I don't know. One of those canyons.
Where are you?
She's making more like public appearances recently.
Is she?
Yeah, I've seen her on like Instagram and like people's concerts.
What?
In a wheelchair, just like checking it out.
Oh my God! Oh my God! I have to go back and play Los Angeles now.
That is the music that, even though it's obviously not from this part of the world, but I first discovered Blue basically while on my first trip through Europe backpacking when I was whatever 19. You know, on my little iPod, I was like, oh my God. You know, on these trains going through France and Holland and England, and I was just like, it was like something that
insides
was in my bloodstream and all along, and I didn't know. I just wanted to, you know.
It's road music, that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hegira on a long journey, and that's it. It's like keeps the eyes wet.
Can you take us out with an a cappella song of some sort? from maybe something that's coming out. Yeah. January 31st, Old Wow, coming to the universe.
Okay, here's a little bit of here's a little bit of one of the other songs on the album.
Okay, what's the song?
This is The Moon Shines Bright.
The Moon Shines Bright. And is this a traditional number that you reconfigured?
That I've rewritten, yeah, based out of fragments of a very, very ancient gypsy carol.
Oh, wow.
That I've sort of made de-Christianized and made for the now.
Okay, let's take it out.
The moon shines bright, and the stars give a light. In a little while it will be day. The voice of love, it calls upon us all and bids us awake and pray. Arise, arise, away thee arise, for life she is calling thee. For it might be the mothering of your sweet soul, if you open your eyes and see that the life of a man, it comes with little plan, it flourishes like a flower, as tender in the heart into which you're born, so cherish your every hour. For our time is not long, time's an old folk song, no longer can we stay. Those that remember say, blessed are you all who make it through this brawl, long life and another good year. Blessed are you all who answer to the call, long life and another good year. For the moon shines bright, and the stars will be our height. Life, she is calling thee. Arise, arise, away thee arise, and ever
there you have it, Mr. Sam Lee. You can find his music and his tour dates at samleesong.co.uk. He's going to be playing Celtic Connections in Glasgow January 29th, and then he'll be playing in Newcastle January 31st, and in Manchester, Nottingham, all over the UK, promoting his brand new record, Old Wow, which drops January 31st. If you go to thebluegrasssituation.com, you can see a Friends and Neighbors piece by Johnny Therrien. It was released a couple days ago, where you can see his video on the Garden of England. It is gorgeous. Check that out at bluegrasssituation.com. It is wonderful to be home after 40 days in Europe and the UK, and my gang Dust Bowl Revival has just announced 3 special new California shows, starting December 13th at the Siren in Morro Bay, Lost on Main in Chico, California, and on the 15th near Santa Cruz at Felton Music Hall. So check that out. It's going to be a lot of fun. And just like Sam, our record comes out January 31st, 2020. It's called Is It You? Is It Me? And each month we will be releasing a new single. Enemy is out already, and the new single comes out the 22nd of November. It will be called Mirror. Really excited about that one. It's gorgeous. So please check that out at DustBowlRevival.com or wherever you cool kids buy music today. The Show on the Road is hosted by me, Zach Lupitin, and produced by the handsome Hawaiian Chris Jacobs with support from the Bluegrass Situation team. If you love The Show on the Road, please leave us a review or rating over at iTunes.com/showontheroad. Tell your friends, and also be sure to check out BGS's ever-growing collection of podcasts up right now on thebluegrasssituation.com. The Show on the Road is a part of the BGS Podcast Network. This is Zach Lupitin. See you on the trail.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.